Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely and a world given back to us. This is Wade here in the podcast studio, joined by my dear friends and colleagues, the Reverend Dr. Michael Berg and the Reverend Professor Jason Oakland. And we are going to be talking today, we haven't done one of these in a while, an episode that's tied to the calendar. We're going to be talking about something that's happening soon, a day of the year. In some churches, a day of the church year. In other churches, maybe not. Different churches handle this different ways.
Third largest crowd in the church year.
God bless this day for good people commemorated on this day, guilting other people into coming to church. I was always very grateful for that.
Christmas Eve, Easter, and Mother's Day.
Yeah, and while it is, Mother's Day is, I think it's a Hallmark holiday. Does it predate kind of that, or is that, it would fall into that?
I don't know when the history of Mother's Day started.
But there is, while it's not an official day in the ancient church year, motherhood in the ancient church year did play an important role. While we, I'm probably the most Marian of the three of us here, is that fair to say? Although Jason is wearing, I would say, a spectacular blue
Marian
colored shirt.
Yep, very Marian.
But this has been, even Luther, right? And when he would talk about Mary and her importance as mother, and days then in the church year that were associated with that, the Annunciation probably, kind of a bit of a Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be talking about probably mothers more than Mother's Day, it sounds like, Michael, from what you said.
I think roughly a little over 100 years.
So that's kind of a Hallmark holiday.
Yeah, I think 1914.
And that doesn't make it bad. I like some Hallmark holidays. So we're going to be talking mothers and the Bible and mothers and the church and mothers. And that is where we will be heading. We are part of the 1517 Podcast Network. You can go to 1517.org and find all kinds of good things there. They just had the Bentonville conference going, so I saw lots of posts about that. But you can go there, you can find daily articles, devotions, Publishing House Free Academy courses. Bruce Hillman just had one that came out not too long ago. All sorts of resources. Just a couple notes from 1517 on stuff going out there. We mentioned last time, you can check out Encouragement for Motherhood, a new devotional book that has come out. I got a copy from 1517, which I shared with a dear friend who is a mother and is reading it and will be giving me her feedback. But a friend of the show, a friend of Jason, a fellow tolerator of Jason, Sarah Crowder, has collaborated or corroborated, how do you say it? Collaborated, right?
I think collaborated would be.
Collaborated on that. There will be a Memorial Day weekend sale, 15% off everything in the 1517 shop. Go and buy Michael's books. You can get that Memorial Day weekend, 15% off sale. Hitchhiking with the Prophets, A Ride Through the Salvation Story of the Old Testament by Chad Bird is available for pre-order. And then finally, you can mark your calendar. The 1517 Podcast Network is being celebrated in June. And again, we are part of that network, so you can look for that in June. With all that being said, we'll make our way into our discussion of mothers and motherhood. Jason or Michael, would one of you be so kind as to give us the disclaimer?
This show doesn't speak for our churches, our church bodies, or our employees. To be honest, much of the time, it probably doesn't speak for us. We will be thinking out loud a lot, so approach what you hear with a healthy skepticism because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with just about everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you were just listening to a podcast. That's right, a podcast. So go live free, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
Thank you. And that brings us to our main topic, which will be mothers and motherhood. And the Reverend Dr. Michael Berg had this idea. He wanted to talk about this. And so I am going to go ahead. I will say, by far, I would say right now the most professional-looking member of the podcast team and the most pastoral-looking. Jason is in his splendid Marian shirt with dress pants. Shoes. I would put him at the second most professional-looking. And I would be third. I have dress shirt, but I went shorts today. I was being bold. I was all dressed up all last week, so I figured
I figured
I deserved it.
Yeah.
Deserved it today. Michael, I'm sure mom dressed you up just wonderfully when you were a little kid. It's time for church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have any matching outfits with siblings?
I have no idea.
Jason, maybe. You had special outfits. I know you did.
My brother.
Your mom cut your hair, and then she put you in
there. Pretty close in age when we were younger, and I know definitely when we were younger, we had some that were pretty much matching. Yeah, exactly.
I have some pictures of me in some pretty sweet 70s clothes. but moms, right? They're the best, always looking after us. What do you want to talk about today, Michael, with mothers and motherhood?
So Mother's Day is coming up, and with all holidays, there's usually some kernel of truth, some little wrinkle there that's philosophical or theological, and then Hallmark gets a hold of it, and it becomes something different, you know. And I think instead of just complaining about all these holidays, maybe sort of kind of maybe lean into them a little bit. So we get all upset about Santa. Well, why don't you talk about St. Nicholas? Y'all upset about Valentine's Day? Why don't you talk about St. Valentine, right? And Mother's Day is one of those as well, where I think there's a opportunity to talk theology.
What are they doing out there?
I think there's a helicopter coming into the hospital.
Jason, yell at them to leave.
Hey, leave.
Flight.
You're intruding upon a podcast.
Flight for life. Very, very
selfish of
very
them.
Very selfish, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Do they not know we have a podcast?
That's right. The windows are open because it's a nice, beautiful May day, but we don't have the air conditioners. They're in the hallway. They have not been installed yet. So we have the
progress
windows
is being
open.
Made there.
We have the windows open, which is just fine, but we are across the street from the major medical complex in Milwaukee, so sometimes we have to put up with.
I apologize for interrupting you, Michael, but you were saying important things, and it was very loud.
Yeah, so I think there's a chance to talk about something theological when it comes to Mother's Day, besides just the gift of mothers and the vocation of mothers, which is a legitimate episode, a legitimate sermon, legitimate Bible class on its own. It's also one of those things where, because it is something that the Roman Catholic Church has talked a lot about, the idea of the church being mother and the connection to Mary and Eve, that Protestants largely ignore, or maybe throw the baby out with the bathwater, or passive-aggressively don't talk about it. And when we do those things, and there's a number of things that we do that could be described in the way I just described, we always lose something. We always lose something. And so is it appropriate for a Lutheran in particular to talk about the church as mother? Well, I'm going to say that St. Paul at least hints at this in Galatians chapter 4. So I have it ready to go. I'm going to read this. This is a part of the allegory of Hagar and Sarah.
Did you say allegory, Michael?
The application of an Old Testament text to
the best part of that is that Paul does say, like, I'm doing allegory.
Right, he does say allegory. I love it. No, the application of an Old Testament text that will lead only to some sort of moral. Yeah? Okay. Mm-hmm. So Hagar and Sarah are being compared. Really, their sons are being compared. Right.
Hera and Sega would be like a good band name.
Yeah. So Sarah gives birth to Isaac. Yes. Hagar gives birth to Ishmael. And Paul is contrasting and comparing old religion, bad religion, versus Christianity, true religion. he's really comparing the two kinds of righteousness here, where he says, see, Ishmael is born of Hagar, the slave woman. He can never be free. And in that context, he can't be the one who inherits the estate. He is going to be one that is never going to be free. He's not going to be free. Isaac, on the other hand, is the son of the free woman, so he's going to be free. He's going to inherit the estate. And what he's talking about here is, again, two kinds of righteousness: law, gospel, bad religion, and good religion. And Hagar and Ishmael, of no fault of their own, by the way, are representative of a righteousness by law, or better yet, a plan of salvation made by human devising. Because Abraham and Sarah, ironically, came up with this plan to have a baby, to carry on the line of the Savior. God wasn't doing it the way they wanted it. She is old, Sarah, and she has not yet had a child. She's post-menopause. And so this is going to be a very big undertaking for her to be pregnant with a son. And she knows how babies are made. So she comes up with a plan that Hagar would sleep with her husband Abraham, and somehow that child would be her child. She didn't think this through, perhaps. But the point is that this was a plan of human devising and represents a righteousness by law, and that can only mean that you are under the law, you are not free. Isaac is the son of a promise, God's promise. He did it despite human devising. And in this faith, this righteousness by faith, you truly are free. It's a beautiful, wonderful picture once you lay it all out. Then he says this: these things may be taken figuratively, for the women represent two covenants. So he's got like a bunch of analogies here, right? One covenant is from Mount Sinai and bears children who are to be slaves. This is Hagar. So law, Mount Sinai, Hagar. Now Hagar stands for Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem because she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem that is above is free, and she is our mother. So St. Paul is, this is terrible writing because he's mixing analogies all over, and you really have to pull it out, right? And so he's saying the church is free. The Jerusalem in heaven is the eternal, that's the church. And then he just throws that in there without much explanation. Oh, by the way, she's our mother. Right, trying to tie in maybe Hagar and Sarah, who are both mothers. So I think that Paul is hinting at something, if not even saying outrightly that the church is mother. And what does that mean? And so I would suggest that when we think about the family relationships that God uses to describe his love for us, we have father, we have husband and wife, father and children, husband and wife, but we also have this thing called mother, right? And so if we're going to talk about father, husband, and wife, I think it's natural and appropriate that we would also use the analogy of mother, even if somebody would sniff a little incense at that and think we're crypto papists. So my contention there is, on Mother's Day, there is a chance to talk about what the church is. And if you think about it, what does a mother do? A mother gives life. A mother teaches. A mother nurtures. A mother
does that thing where she reaches back in the car with her right hand while driving and just swings wildly around.
A mother disciplines.
My mom was good at that one.
Yeah.
A mother makes a home. And a mother is often the last person to give up on you or to turn her back on you often. So when we look at the baptismal font,
lots of people, as they face dire circumstances, a threat or death, it's just they cry out for their mother. Yeah. Even if their mother's long been dead, right? Lots of historical records, or even just contemporary events, you'll hear that, of kind of this instinctive you know, desire for their mother in this trying moment.
So the, if you look at the baptismal font, you should see this as a tomb, because I go there to die. I go there to be crucified. My sinful nature has been crucified in the waters of baptism. It's a tomb. But baptism is not just a drowning and a death. It's a resurrection, and it's also a rebirth. So the idea of being born again, the idea of being regenerated, is the same exact thing as death and resurrection. A, it is salvation. It is something new, and it's something you can't do. You can't make yourself back alive after you've dead, nor can you choose to be born, right? And so it's pure gospel. Which is ironic when people say you need to be born again, and that's exactly what Jesus said to Nicodemus, but Nicodemus got it. He's like, but I can't.
Right.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we kind of miss that what Jesus is doing there. So that baptismal font is not only a tomb, it's a womb. Right? It gives life. And who does this but church? And I have no problem saying Mother Church. So it is the one that's going to give life, much like mothers are going to create out of nothing, right? A soul, right? But only by the creative act of God. So the creative act of God's word, right, is going to create you and me out of our mother's womb, but also the creative act of word is going to make us new Christians, be born again in the womb of the church. And I think there's a beautiful picture there.
And this is, the church is the bride of Christ.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Christ makes Christians through his church. Yeah. I mean, this has been what he institutes at the beginning. He tells the church, go and make disciples of all nations.
And he honors mothers by doing something that men cannot do, right? And he honors the church. Yeah, by, he didn't have to do it through the church, but he did it through the church. And if you start to then, you know, think of the other analogies, you know, we spend a lot of time and energy and money making the church a home, right? I mean, like
community.
It's not just a pole barn. There's art and decorations in there in a way that typically a mother is going to make a house a home. We spend a lot of time and energy and thought on educating. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time and energy chasing after people.
Every time we gather, we wash up.
And we eat.
Yeah.
And we eat. There's a table there. She feeds us. I think it's such a great opportunity to think about the church and motherhood in connection with Mother's Day.
I'll throw in two. You know, it's I think sometimes Lutherans, modern Lutherans, especially American Lutherans, but really maybe after the maybe the second, third generation Lutherans start to lose kind of Luther's balancing of the received tradition and obviously the reinvigorated gospel. And, you know, Luther on the Magnificat is just fantastic, right? And he talks about Mary is right up there with the apostles. She's not an apostle, but the role she plays is so critically important.
She may have been there at Ascension, by the way.
Yeah, Pentecost. And I think maybe if we just think of even how Mary is pictured in the scriptures, that gets at something of what a mother does, right? She's there at the Annunciation. She ascends to the angel Gabriel to give birth to the Christ. She gives birth. She cares for him. She uproots with Joseph to go to Egypt. And I always think Joseph is just a fantastic picture of fatherhood as well. You know, we look at the Heavenly Father, for example, as a father too, but Joseph, you know, stepping in to this. But she uproots. She goes where it's best to protect her son. She takes him to the temple, which he then, of course, stays behind at. But she makes sure he's been educated in the faith. So we see her taking him to the temple, both when she goes for her purification and then when he's 12 years old. She's there with him in his suffering. She's one who's by his side, and perhaps maybe the most famous sculpture in church history, Pietà, right? The Michelangelo of Mary holding her son. We don't know if that happened, but what is being imaged is important. And what does Simeon say to her? And a sword shall pierce your own soul.
She suffers
too. Yeah,
like a mother, only a mother can.
And she doesn't just watch him suffering. Exactly, she's empathetic, but she's also there for his resurrection. Right, she is with the apostles. We know that John cares for her. Jesus entrusts his mother right to John. And if we think of a lot of the points that Mary is at, I think this gets at a lot of what why the picture of church's mother fits with what a mother does, and I think really exalts motherhood. We tend to want to make things great by making them like something else, right? So when we want something to be important, we try to make it like something else that we think is important, and sometimes we lose then what's actually important about the thing. And I think that's where Luther so helpful in the Magnificat is if we look at the specific, I mean, when Paul says a woman will be saved through childbearing, well, it's through Mary. She gives birth to the Messiah, right? And Eve is the mother of all the living, that we can see all these things that are particularly wonderful about motherhood. And as you said, something that we'll never experience. I don't know how your guys' experience was when your kids were born, but they didn't want you first, probably, right? They put them on mom and they calm down. Dad, it takes a while. Who is this dude? You know, not so sure about him. And I think this is with the church as well. We, Heavenly Father, we know the Father, but how do we know him? We know him through Christ, right? If we've seen Christ, the apostles are told, then we've seen the Father. Well, how do we know Christ? Christ comes to us through the church. Right, and so it's natural then that we ought to be drawn to the church in a way like what we would be drawn to a mother if we had a loving mother, because that's where we find forgiveness, that's where we find life, that's where we find sustenance, that's where we find nurturing. And it's not that we're going to the church instead of Christ. It's that we're going to the church because that's where Christ is.
And maybe like just, you know, if someone's already like, well, then, you know, it's not Jesus and Mary. It's not Jesus and the church. It's only Jesus. Yeah, I understand that. What does a good mother do, though? A good mother does not take the spotlight.
Yeah.
Right? Good mother does not
even
take the spotlight.
Even at Cana, Mary wasn't like, my boy's the Messiah. Right. He'll change the water into wine.
Yeah.
She quietly goes to him and she says, hey, you know, they're kind of in a bad situation.
Right. So,
and then Jesus gets sassy.
He does multiple times.
And like a good mother, she puts up with him. He's like, what does this have to do with me, woman? And he says, woman, right? And
then, multiple times, I think.
Oh, I should have one of my boys say that to my wife later and see how that goes.
That's when I make in class when I go, okay, the whole what would Jesus do thing, you know, like let's not make him a law. He's not your nagging aunt or whatever, you know. And also there's some things Jesus said and did that you shouldn't do, and I use that as an example. Yeah. Don't call your mother woman. You know, so, but, you know, two things. One is the idea of what a good mother really is the person that is the last person that will give up on you. Right. And we've listed all these things, right? Nurturing, feeds, washes, bathes, gives birth, all of these things that the church does that you could see in mothers, making a home, all these kinds of things. And this is what the bride collectively does for, you know, it's the bride and the mother are, you know, those are things that those images cross over quite a bit. But, you know, if there are mothers listening, you may think, well, thanks for the guilt, right? And my answer to that is the same answer the same thing that we preach to fathers and husbands is, you know, you're supposed to be the icon of the father to your children, and you're not going to be great at that. So, you know, what you do is make sure you bring your children to the father, and you husbands are supposed to be Christ to your brides, and that's not only impossible, but you're not going to even want to do it half the time. Maybe think about bringing your bride to the groom who can do what you cannot do. And the same for mothers. When you fail as a mother, maybe the one thing that you can do, and a lot of mothers are like, this is the only thing I have left to do. This is my primary thing, is to bring my children to the mother who can, right? And for your convenience, we're there every Sunday morning.
Well, and I think for mothers who can feel overwhelmed as well, which all are going to feel at some point, because they often are not only dealing with children but with fathers, at least I feel like.
You're speaking for Tricia.
But maybe it's helpful in those times to remember too that your church isn't perfect, right? That we believe in a holy Christian church, and that's an article of faith. But the church's holiness is in Christ, and just as the church is imperfect and sometimes overwhelmed, and seldom is going to give you the Sunday that's just all just right. You're going to have voters' meetings where you argue about stupid stuff, and there's this person who did that thing again, and, you know, whatever else. That is how being a father or a mother is as well. Our holiness is the same as the holiness of the church. It's Christ's holiness received from him. And so maybe that's a helpful reminder for mothers who may feel overwhelmed or struggle at times too, is welcome to the club, the church, yeah. Right? Your mother, the church does as well. And it's in the midst of all that that we gather for word and sacrament. And it's why we gather.
And I think, you know, that's something too, that this whole, you know, the mother picture thing. I think so one of the things, like, I think Rome kind of gets out of bounds a little bit when they try to associate this with the visible institution, right?
Right.
And I think that, you know, the temptation is always there, you know, for those who are not Roman in their confession, to say, well, now we just need a different institution. And I think that that's important to keep that we're not talking about an institution. We're not talking about a church body. We're not talking about a congregation. Although it's hard for us to not think that way when we talk about church, right? This idea that, but church, the church is God's people gathering around the word, right? Around the gospel. And I think that's one of the things, you know, when you talk mom, when you talk mothers too, is that, you know, they're probably the first ones praying for that child, you know, I think. And then oftentimes, you know, the ones who are, you know, going back to that teaching component, right, where, you know, not necessarily that, you know, although you may be the first ones bringing them to the church, but, you know, that idea of first bringing them to Jesus, in the sense, you know, oftentimes at home, whether it's the saying of prayers or the reading of stories or bedtime rituals, and you know, not as if dads aren't involved with that, but I think where you see that nature of people gathering around the gospel, moms often become the first model of that, I think, and understanding, yes, that happens at your local congregation and church body and things like that, but when you think more broadly, you know, and more generally, that this is, you know, all believers gathering, this is the church, this is the picture, right? But oftentimes we think of that in terms of our local,
right,
local circumstances, and I think when you talk maybe the most local or the closest to home or sometimes the very first,
yep,
places where
Luther
that happens,
says they're bishops and apostles to their children. Yeah, yep,
right.
And maybe one more thing too to add to this, and of course fathers do this, and this is from the Father and through Christ the Word, of course, but mothers put the words of trust and faith onto the lips of their toddlers. Say I love you.
Yeah.
Say please, say thank you. Not because the mother's not going to feed the child unless they say please or thank you, but it's building that trust. And that's what God does with prayer, right? He, in the Psalms specifically, he says, here are the words of trust. Here are the words. And so mothers, to use your analogy, mothers are the first ones to, and fathers, but the mothers are the first ones to teach language in a very real way before they go to school. And so the church at home and the church publicly with songs and with prayers and with memorization and eventually catechesis puts the words of faith and trust on the tongues of their children and then therefore the hearts.
Right? Yeah. Well, I think you could say maybe even in the womb that happened.
Oh,
I mean,
for
that,
sure. Yeah.
That, you know,
mother, the those, children can recognize that,
yes, yep.
mother's voice. We know that for sure.
Yeah.
The and maybe to go back just as we get ready to wrap up, but to something that Michael said earlier and just unpack a little bit more. In ethics, I talk about the difference between reproduction and procreation. And I really wish Christians wouldn't use the word reproduction nearly as much as we use the word procreation. Procreation, you see the word in there, creation. Mm-hmm. Reproduction, you see the word product. And, you know, especially in modern bioethics, that child's product is becoming more of an issue. And not just, and it has been an issue ever since you get the industrial revolution and lowering birth rates because children are seen as not an economic benefit now and they're kind of a cost. And we speak about affording kids, like we talk about, can I afford, you know, a Toyota instead of a Kia? Or
the answer is no, we can't afford children.
Exactly. And but if we I think for both mothers and for church, it's a marvel to remember that for Christians this is procreation, that God is creating through and with father and mother when he gives a child. And I think that's important for the church to remember too, because the church can sometimes fall into thinking about reproduction rather than procreation too when it's talking about thinking about growth and making disciples. And if you're just thinking reproduction, you're going to lose the means of grace. You're going to forget that it's God working in and with and through people. And you're going to do like any business does when it's dealing with products. And that emphasis, that remembering the amazement of procreation, this is, you know, this is one of the things with childbirth is, I remember once I was coaching and there was a guy who was going to be a new dad who was a stepdad to one of the kids. And he asked me what it's like. And I mean, I was honest. I'm like, oh, it's terrible. Like, I'm like, you're going to see the person you love most, like in pain and agony. And then the kid's going to come out and be all bloody or like blue or whatever, you know, and then they're going to want you to cut the umbilical cord, which you think is going to be like a ribbon, but it's not. Like, you could tow a Chevy with this thing. and I'm just like, this is, you know. But then, like, your kid's there, and everything's good. Well, he focused on the everything before the, but then, and the mom talked to me the next practice and said, you know, what did you say to him? And out of curiosity, and I said, well, so I told her, and she's like, well, he's terrified now. And so I had to talk to him and kind of apologize. But it is, you know, Jesus uses the illustration of his coming will be like a woman who's in the pangs of childbirth. And Eve is cursed with there's going to be pain in childbirth. And yet, I think most couples who have been in that room and had the baby born, and most mothers would say that's all forgotten when they hold their child.
Which is Romans chapter 8, yeah.
And that, I think, also, that's... That awe that a mother can have at what's happened in all of that, that's a good reminder for the church that it ought to have the same when God makes new Christians.
Sorry, theology of the cross here, too. Like, this is a painful thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think there's a...
But then you see a new Christian and you go, God did that through us. Like, that. It's easy for us to focus on all the kids we don't have. You know, the church to say, well, there was only 100 people here today. And I used to always tell my people, I'd be like, there was 100 people here today.
Right.
Like in a world, you know, to whom this message is crazy, there was 100 crazy people here today. Most other places, if you had 100 crazy people in one place, you'd be like, wow, there's 100 crazy people downtown.
Well, here's another now to a mother who, you know, has, you know, now maybe a grandmother who wants the whole family there for Thanksgiving. And, you know, there's one family that had to go somewhere else or is a wayward son or whatever. Hurts her. It's still great joy when 17 out of 18 of our extended family are there.
And sometimes, too, you know, I think this is true for parents in general, but especially for mothers. Sometimes you look at other kids and you go, I wish my kid would be more like that mm-hmm. in certain aspects of life. But at the same time, you would never trade your kid. And Christ is the same way with his church. You know, he think of all the times he could have looked at his apostles and been like, man, I really should have thought more before I called these guys.
Upgrade.
I think sometimes for us in ministry, you look at other churches and you go, oh, man, that this or that seems a little rosier. Well, this is where God's planted you.
Yeah.
This is the kids he's given you. You don't abandon your kids.
And it's not just like there's no perfect family. Like,
right.
You may trade one problem for another, but
And I think that's a good mother reminder.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, happy Mother's Day.
We should do, speaking of trading kids, you know, like on Carnival, they used to have the role reversals, those in church. What we should have is 1 week a year where we swap.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm going to go with no.
You don't want mine?
Well, I didn't.
It sounds like, Jason's only got one, but it sounds like still expensive, so.
I thought you were gonna say to swap places with them, for not swap kids with each other, but to say.
Oh, that'd be great, but I think everything would burn down.
Yeah, right, you know, but just to, you know, and I was gonna say, I don't think we could do a week of that. That was gonna be, but, yeah.
I got my own problems, man.
Yeah.
I got my own problems, man.
All right, well, we will, we're at about our time, so I think we will wish all the mothers listening a happy Mother's Day. This should come out just before that, as it's approaching. And we will give thanks for Christ Church, through whom we have received salvation, forgiveness, and life. And
Jason, what's your mother's name?
My mom's name is Renee.
Renee, happy Mother's Day. What's your mother's name?
Jocelyn. Say it right.
Jocelyn, happy Mother's Day, Jocelyn. My mother, Susan. Happy Mother's Day, Susan.
And we've now named all three listeners to the podcast. All right, well, happy Mother's Day, and to our moms, and to all moms, and to all members of the Christian Church, in which Christ gives us true freedom through word and sacrament. We hope you will continue to join us in letting the bird fly.
Goes down, get with my party and I begin to cry. I don't care what the people are thinking, I'm not drunk, I'm just a drinker. I set them up, another round, I set them up, another round, I set them up, another round, one more round won't get me down.